Welcome to Quimper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy this recording from our May 15th service. Joseph Bednarik's sermon topic is Golden Cracks, Breakage and the Fine Arts of Repair. Following the sermon, the music is Weeping Willow Rag by Scott Joplin, performed by Pat Rogers. Thanks for listening.
One of the beautiful things about being able to present a sermon is trying to find a reading that speaks to the sermon topic. And late in the week, I didn't have a reading yet, and so I started to look for one. And I found this. I don't know the poet. I'd never heard of the poem before Thursday, and I found this in the Sun magazine. It's called Fixing a Lamp by Sarah Pemberton Strong. I pull the old cord from the base, its black cloth rotted from the wires, because my mother says this brass desk lamp belonged to her great-grandmother, who kept it on the table beside the bed to which she was confined, her ancient bones breaking and re-breaking. At 85, she instructed my mother, age 6, now, dearie, in the top drawer, beneath my underthings, you'll find some pliers. I need replacement parts and lack the words. Have only round piece, curved piece, thing. My mother offers me a yellowed repair manual from 1963, its diagrams as intricate as a body. I learn socket shell, harp holder, tube nut. I learn to tie the underwriter's knot, looping the new cord through itself as insurance against fire, electrocution. My mother, married, had 2 children, got divorced. She used to put the kids to bed, then take a sledgehammer to a kitchen wall that no longer pleased her. Waking at night to the sound of demolition, I learned the breaking down and subsequent repairing of the world. In the morning, dust everywhere, no breakfast, light in a different place. So, good morning. One of the reasons that we come to church is to be inspired. And one of the reasons we come to church is to be challenged. Rarely do we come to church thinking that we will be taking risks. This morning, I ask that you join me in taking a challenging, inspiring risk to enter some interesting territory, some unsettling territory, and best of all, some defining territory. This morning, we are going to enter the crack. The crack that can develop for so many reasons. Internal pressure, outside forces, random accidents, the gravity of years piling upon years. The cracks that develop in our physical stuff, as well as the cracks that appear in our dreams, in our hopes, and in our lives. One of Benjamin Franklin's most enduring quotes is, "Nothing is certain except death and taxes." And I think that we would get little argument from old Ben if we petitioned him to add at least one more item to that list, and everything breaks along the way. Everything breaks along the way. It is only a matter of time, whether it's 2 minutes or 20 years or 200 millennia. No matter how carefully you take care. Take, for instance, my grandmother's prized china. After she died, I inherited her marvelous Haviland Limoges china set. This was decades ago. She worked very hard to earn this piece by piece through some promotion at her local bank. She owned the set for half a century, kept it protected in a locked china cabinet, and only used it on special occasions. And yet, over time, with the dinner guests taking exceptional care, when you handle the set, you will find numerous chips and cracks. Now, I can only imagine what kind of shudders ran through my grandmother's body when she watched people use her precious china. Then, of course, the repairing. The repairs on Grandma's china are quite obvious, as the glues have aged and yellowed, and they've browned. And I especially like to think of two items, a particular coffee cup and the lid to the sugar bowl, both of which broke into two pieces, and both of which were carefully repaired to good working order, though truth be told, the cup was taken out of useful rotation, but it was still kept within the set. Now, I wasn't alive when these repairs were made, but somebody invested time and took care. They did a good job. Most likely somebody related to me that I'll never know. What I do know is that the seams are smooth, and that in the time before the glues became discolored, you would have to have looked very closely to see that the china had been broken. Now, this is the way with many repairs. Make the repair invisible. But that's not the way with all repairs. There is an ancient style of repair practiced in Japan called kintsugi, or golden joinery, where repairs to broken pottery are made to be seen, even admired, using a compound of lacquer that's accented by gold dust, and thus a golden seam where once there was breakage. Now, the metaphor is as obvious as it is beautiful. Our repairs are precious, often life-saving, and many aspire to art into an elevated spiritual awareness. Because in a world where we know breaking will happen, to live a rich and fulfilling life, we would do well to learn and practice the three A's: art, acceptance, appreciation. The art of repairing, the acceptance to be repaired, the appreciation of repairs. I am reminded of this startlingly gorgeous black and white photograph of a young woman who has had to have a breast removed because of cancer. She's standing in a natural setting. She's topless. Her long blonde hair is swept back from the wind, with her arms joyfully outstretched, as if she were preparing to fly. There is a jagged scar across her chest, and a small rose tattooed where her breast used to be, the scar essentially being the stem to the rose. Now, this was a time before tattoos were de rigueur. The woman is in the vanguard at this point. It is an arresting, memorable photo. And when you look at the photo, your eyes cannot help but track to the flower and the scar. The flower and the scar. The flower and the scar. And as fascinating, as provocative as that tableau is, eventually your attention focuses on her face, a face that is radiant with life and joy. A face that's radiant with life and joy, connected forever to a scar where a breast used to live. See, And that's the genius of the photograph. Complete, open-armed, naked reveal of a precious scar. The here it is, here is where my life led me. Reality of the scar and the radiant face that renders the scar as simply a thin squiggle of fused skin on the map of this beautiful woman's life. The map that leads straight to an open, joyous, alive face. I look at this woman and I see kintsugi, golden joinery. We are all somewhere, sometime, broken, cracked, chipped, dented, broken heart, broken bones, broken bank account, broken dreams, and those scars and seams where we piece our lives back together are meaningful. And yet, after the photo was taken, the woman slipped on her shirt and the scar was covered. What about a scar that can't be covered? A healed wound that becomes a focal point for the human eye because of broken symmetry. In his new book, poet Mark Doty has a short poem called Ars Poetica, 14th Street Gym. Again, we see the appearance of tattoos, and I need to explain two terms. One, an Ars Poetica is a poem that's written essentially about the arts of poetry, and the word sleeve. In the poem, the word sleeve is essentially a sleeve of tattoos, an arm entirely covered in tattoos. Ars Poetica, 14th Street Gym by Mark Doty. Beauty that does not disguise the wound, but reads through to the lack it marks. The one-armed man lifts himself again on the assisted pull-up machine. Sleeve of sparrows and morning glories swelling with each upward pull. In the locker room, I praise his ink, and he turns to thank me, and so I'll notice what you can't restore, inscribe, the blue wing needled on the socket. And so you have a one-armed man exercising his one arm, someone who tattooed birds and morning glory on the arm that's there. On the other side, on the socket where an arm used to be, a blue wing. Now, I can't help but wonder what I would do in that situation. Would I have the courage and the wit to adorn myself in such a way, to boldly accentuate and call attention to my loss? I hope I would, because the so-called loss becomes pure inspiration, the inspiration for a poet to compose, the inspiration for strangers to meet and talk in the gym, the inspiration for a reader to share the story with a congregation 3,000 miles away. Again, let's consider this a bit of kintsugi, golden joinery, where the broken shows the so-called whole, how to exercise what's there and how to celebrate what's not. And while we're on tattoos of one-armed men, I just have to mention this. I was looking at a book a couple of months ago, and the book was called something like The World's Worst Tattoos. And let me tell you, it was brutal to witness. It was like watching a train wreck page after page, because some people have done some truly hideous things. I mean, the one that I love the most, arguably, is the hardest one to detect. The tattoo is huge. He's on some beefy guy, and it's all across his back in this beautiful, beautiful calligraphy, and it says, "No regrets." Except there was an unfortunate typo. So the tattoo actually reads, "No regrets." It takes a while, but I digress. So in this book of train wreck tattoos, there were a few where the author showed some brilliant examples of dark humor, such as the man whose arm had been severed at the elbow and he tattooed a large fingernail on the end of his arm. So he essentially has the world's largest finger, you know? You can either point the direction or really flip the bird, I guess. I don't know. So to loop back to scars. Now, it is a truism that scars become part of us. They are one of the many ways in which we tell the stories of ourselves. There's that great scene in the movie Jaws where the crew of three very different men on a very small boat, a small town cop, a scientist, and a grisly fisherman are on this little craft in pursuit of a very mean and vicious shark. And one night afloat off the Jersey shore, the men are drinking and they begin to compare scars and swap stories, because behind each story, or behind each scar, is a story. A war wound, an alley fight, a shark attack, a car wreck, bad luck, we have all got them, our scars and our stories. Now for those who have parented children, there is that poignant and powerful moment when you realize that your beautiful baby, your innocent and precious child, will be scarred. There is no stopping it. Starting at the first moments of their life and the clipping of the cord that creates their first scar called navel. And it's pleasant to consider that that first scar is such a target for laughter and the giggles. No, for a parent, it's the second scar. Especially a serious scar that is the real challenge. For my daughter Opal, it came when she was about 5 years old. She had a series of hideous ear infections that led to this growing mass inside her ear called a cholesteatoma. And she needed several surgeries to remove the mass, and the mass had dissolved her ear bones. And then she had to get a really tiny prosthetic inserted in her ear so she could hear again. Now, medical miracles, to be sure. But when I pulled into my driveway after these surgeries, when we returned from the hospital with her ear covered in gauze, a big old half dome of gauze, I looked at my house. And I just said, take it all. Take everything. Just give that little girl her ear bones back. But there is no going back. Life moves in the river's direction. The damage had been done. Now there is the healing. Now is the time for Kintsugi. Now friends knew what we were going through, and our family received a lot of support. One of my friends is a well-known poet who lost an eye when he was only 7. So he has this very visceral response to wounds that children suffer. And he wrote my daughter a little poem that used her name as the title. Opal. By Jim Harrison. Oh, Opal, your ear. In my heart, both hear the glorious void, preferring the birds. That poem got included in one of Jim's poetry books called Saving Daylight. I love that title. And years later, my family was in San Francisco at the legendary bookstore City Lights, and Opal's twin sister saw the book on the bookshelf at the store. And she got very excited, and she opened the page into the poem and showed the poem to her sister. And I like to think of that little poem inside that book and that sweet sisterly interaction as a bit of golden joinery. Now, it's interesting to think of how many times birds and flight appear in our examples. A wing in a socket. A sleeve of sparrows, the outstretched arm of a windswept woman, and a deaf ear and a broken heart, trying to hear the birds. And in the Leonard Cohen song that we used as our responsive reading this morning, birds appear in the first line. The birds, they sang at the break of day, Start again, I heard them say. Don't dwell on what has passed away or what is yet to be. And then those great lines of the chorus, ring the bells that still can ring, forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Now, I absolutely love those lines. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. And of course, the sailors among us are allowed to be a touch cynical about a line like that because the crack is also how the water gets in. Now, earlier in the sermon, I made mention of Ben Franklin's famous line about the certainty of death and taxes. Death, of course, is seen as the ultimate break. And I started wondering about kintsugi, between the living and the dead. I had reason to think deeply about this issue because earlier this year, I was asked to perform the eulogy for a friend who had and neighbor who had died. The man, who I will call Jay, had a remarkable story to draw from. And it was while writing Jay's eulogy that I became inspired to write a sermon about kintsugi, about repairing things beautifully and well. You see, my friend was a brilliant mechanic, and he was always fixing things. He was also very passionate about flying, and one of our special connections was that I would bring him picture books about airplanes. He loved airplanes. He loved airplanes so much that after he graduated from high school, he joined the Air Force and was stationed overseas in Italy for 3 years. He was a groundling, though. He was not a flyer, but he wanted to learn to fly. And while in Italy, he met a famous Italian World War I flying ace who not only encouraged him to take up his love of flying, but also gave him lessons. Even though Jay did not speak Italian, nor the pilot English, they both spoke flying, and they got along beautifully. And my friend Jay became a licensed pilot. A few years after Jay returned from Europe, his life took this huge turn when he took off from the local airfield in Port Townsend, and his plane crashed. It was a horrible accident. Almost every bone in his body was broken. Doctors told the family that he would not live through the night. He was 28. After he did live through the night, it was clear that he needed a level of treatment that was beyond the scope of the Port Townsend Hospital. Add to that the sobering reality that any bumpy transport to Seattle, whether by air or by road, would jostle his wounded and fragile body and kill him. He was literally trapped inside a shattered body, too fragile to move. Trapped, perhaps, but not caught, because his uncle, who drove the local ambulance, and Jay's father, carefully rolled him out of the hospital in Port Townsend and drove him slowly and painstakingly to Providence Hospital in Seattle, where he underwent numerous surgeries. Imagine that. A slow, smooth as possible drive to the big city where a miracle might occur. I like to think of that road trip, that loving, slow, we've got to do something road trip, as a golden seam. This is the profound understanding that sometimes, to call forth a miracle and repair something very broken, we need to move with genius and vision and very slowly. So Jay not only survived, but he lived another 50 years. He not only survived, but he lived to become a certified airplane mechanic. Now imagine learning to fix and maintain the machines that nearly killed him. Now in his heart, my friend was a flyer, and in his brain and his hands, he was a mechanic. And because he survived this horrible crash, because he was given a new lease on life, Jay shared the blessings of being repaired by repairing, improving, and easing the lives by bringing back to people's lives their broken machines. Jay was always bringing things back to life, rescuing something broken and transforming it back to usefulness. From drenching a seized-up crescent wrench in WD-40 to rehabbing an old lawnmower to work for one more summer, maybe two, maybe three. Here was a man left for dead 50 years ago who, against all the odds, chose to live, and with that life, decided that fixing the broken things was a pursuit worth a life. In living this way, Jay was in profound company. Many saints and sages and saviors find their life's purpose on earth attending to and healing the broken. And so it is. From a rose tattooed on a cancer scar to learning the three A's, the art of repairing, the appreciation of repairs, the acceptance to be repaired. Backdropped by the fourth A, Leonard Cohen's song, Anthem, where we ring the bells that still can ring when we forget our perfect offering, because there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. And may you be blessed with good stories for your scars, with light beaming through your cracks, and the patience and the wit to practice kintsugi, golden joinery, and experience the true treasure in repair. Amen.